Blog Talk Radio.
I'm gonna do it. Yep.
Franchise Pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchising today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchising today. Franchising today.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is April 12, 2017. I'm reporting from the damp city of Houston, Texas, and my co-host Stan Friedman in the hot city of Hotlanta. Stan, I hope you're staying dry.
I am dry as can be and having a great day, Paul. We don't get the same weather at the same time, but it seems almost every week we're opening up the program talking about one or the other of us taking a pounding. So this is your week.
Yeah, we got a pretty good pounding yesterday, but of course it is springtime in the southeast Texas area, and humid as all hell. I spent some time in Vegas the other day. I was thinking ahead to the multi-unit conference coming up at Caesar's Palace in just 2 weeks by our friends at the Franchise Update Media Group.
And speaking of that, Paul, thanks for the graphic that you sent me. Nice picture of you at the Carnegie Deli and enjoying your signature pastrami on rye as I sit here in Atlanta today and take the very last bite of my number two Big John from Jimmy John's just before showtime, sitting here realizing that this time next week I'll be eating that number two with Jimmy John because he'll be with us next week as our guest.
That'll be great. I look forward to that. So what else we got on front of the house today?
Just a couple of things to point out today, Paul. A big win for IFA franchisees and franchisors in the home state of today's guest, who we'll be introducing in just a moment. But the state of Florida scored a big win with shutting down a damaging and misguided franchise relation bill in the Florida Senate that SB 750 would have impacted transfers and some things to do with death of franchisees and who can then take on the unit on a go-forward basis. That bill has been squashed in Florida to the benefit of franchisors and franchisees. And that's some good news. Getting a legislative win anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Paul, IFA is looking for nominees. They are open nominations now for both the IFA Foundation Board as well as the IFA Main Board of Directors. So for any of our listeners who don't have two or three full-time jobs, a business to run, and a podcast to do, if you're at all interested, you can log on to the IFA website and find out more about each of those opportunities. And speaking of IFA, IFA is also looking for nominations for this year's Rosenberg Award winner. Nominations are being accepted for the William Rosenberg Leadership Award, which is presented each year at the convention, to an individual who's made a significant contribution to franchise education and to the IFA through research, teaching, fundraising, and or other activities or services. Deadlines for the nominations are June 1st, so that's coming up pretty quickly. If you know anybody that you think is a stalwart leader in the world of franchising who would be worthy of the William Rosenberg Award, let IFA know about it between now and the 1st of June. And Paul, I wanted to just do a shout-out to a couple of our friends in the franchise development world. As I noted this week, that Tide Dry Cleaners reached its 50-store milestone with the store that they opened in Columbus, Ohio. So great work from Stuart Williams and his team at Tide. And also my good friend Corey Wild and Brewster's has reached an expansion deal into the city of Nashville, Tennessee. Along with six other markets, they're now pushing the 200 mark of open stores and operating Brewster's Ice Cream. So congratulations to Corey and Lori and all the team over at Brewster's. And, Paul, you know, I could go on for a while, but we've got such a great guest today. I think I'm going to cut it short and make room for us to have a little bit more time to talk with Larry. What do you think?
Sounds great, but before that, I do want to mention a great article put out yesterday by our friends at Franchise Business Review, Eric Stites and Michelle Rowan. It was titled Women in Franchising, a Look at the Leaders Influencing the Franchise Business Model. And as I've said it here more than on one occasion, I believe women are great leaders in franchising, and some of the named individuals were Nancy Bigley. We have Susan Beth, Deb Evans, Catherine Monson, Amy Chang, Rosemary Hartnett, and the list goes on and on. Many of them, most of them, former guests on Franchise Today, and certainly a very interesting article. I'm sure you'll find it on Franchise Business Review. We're sharing it on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, as we do everything with Franchise Today. So all good stuff in franchising. So a quote I read, if somebody would have told me when I started this company that we're going to grow into the 17th largest tire dealer in the United States, there's no way I would have envisioned that. Of course, that's from our guest, Larry Sutton, the CEO and founder of R&R Tire Express and Custom Wheels. Welcome to Franchise Today, Larry.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. It's a great day to have a great day. And Stan, good to be with you as well.
And we appreciate you taking some time and helping our audience learn a little bit more about who you are and what your business is all about. And I guess my first question is where the name R&R came from. What was the genesis of the name of the business?
Well, that's actually an excellent question, because when we started our company, we actually were named Rent and Roll. It's kind of like rock and roll. I'm kind of a frustrated rocker. I grew up playing in rock bands, so I guess I couldn't get away from trying to have some moniker there, you know. But, yeah, when I decided to get into the wheel and tire business and use the rent-owned transaction, it just seemed like the natural thing, you know, rent and roll. It just kind of all came together. And so we started as Rent and Roll. Later on, we decided that it might be encapsulating this into a pocket, and we wanted to be a broader, we wanted to appeal to a broader audience. So we shortened that to R&R, just the letters R&R. And at that time, it was R&R Custom Wheels and Performance Tires. And we pretty much specialized in the wheel industry, which always takes performance tires when you upsize. And then later, as the business grew, we decided that, you know, we looked at the passenger tire industry in the United States and saw literally over $20 billion of replacement tires every year, and decided that, you know, really to grow year-on-year numbers and to really get big in this industry, we really need to become a tire dealer with wheels as opposed to a custom wheel shop. Therefore, you have today's name, which we go by in all of our new stores, R&R Tire Express.
Now, I didn't know what it was, but I was pretty confident that there was a story there, and by gosh, I was right, wasn't I? So, Larry, let's peel the onion back a little bit. Let's peel the onion back just a little bit further, because I'm willing to stake my claim and make a bet that nobody, even you, grew up telling himself that one day he's going to be the CEO of a tire and custom wheel business, much less the franchisor of a custom wheel and tire business. So tell us how that happened. Bring us back to a time and place where all of this began, and we'll then push out from there to how it's morphed into what it has become.
Well, I will try to give you the short version. You might have to slap me around a little bit and tell me that I've told you enough. So I was born and raised in Oklahoma. I had a single mom that really set the table for me in terms of work ethic, because this woman just worked her tail off to be sure that, you know, we didn't suffer for anything. I mean, she was the kind of woman that when we first moved to Florida, we moved to Florida for her to go to work for my uncle, who owned a TV and appliance company. And I was 14, 15 years old, and it was myself and my brother were left at home. My sister had left. And this just tells you everything you'll ever want to know about my mom. We moved to Florida. We could only afford a little duplex, or one part of a duplex, and it had one bedroom. Well, guess who got the bedroom? The boys got the bedroom, and Mom slept on the couch. She worked a couple of jobs most of the time that I knew her, and just to make sure that, you know, we had what we needed and we didn't suffer. And I got to tell you, we didn't live high on the hog, but we didn't know we were poor either. She just made sure that we didn't even know that. So anyway, that's kind of what got me exposure to selling. I went to work for my uncle at 14, 15 years old in the TV and appliance business. I was delivering appliances. And at 16, he let me come to the sales floor. By my senior year, I had actually held the distinguished notice of selling every teacher I had at least something in their house, a refrigerator, a television, something. And, of course, I was doing it thinking if I give them a good deal, I'd get maybe up from a D to a C. So I had a motive and a better grade. But my uncle actually experimented with the rental business in its early stages, recognizing that there was a lot of people that wanted better things and didn't have the cash. And so he had looked at that industry. And it also, I was introduced to a company by the name of Curtis Mathis. Curtis Mathis was a television manufacturer, and they had an entire division dedicated to the rent-to-own industry. It was called Rutherford. And one of my jobs at Mathis, I actually went to work for them, and one of my jobs was to go around and teach people that transaction and how to bring that into your business and make that transaction work and help these people get the things they need on payments. And so I had an early exposure to that transaction. I loved it because I loved the people that were using it. They were just hardworking people that wanted better things, but they didn't have the cash to be able to get them. And so I started with them, and I met a guy that said, hey, I'd like to do a business with you. I was actually trying to sell him a territory, and he said, why don't we do it together? And I said, well, what would that look like? And he said, well, I would put up all the money and give you 49%. And I said, I'm young and dumb, right? And I'm thinking, 49% is kind of a job. I've already got a job. So why don't I just go ahead and do it for you and you own it? So I did. I set up, I hired the people, trained the people, got the store open. It was called Champion Rent-A-Home. And about 2 months into it, he comes down for a visit. And we have lunch, and he's looking at everything going, man, this is really good. And we're at lunch, and he looked at me and said, what's keeping you from being my partner? And I looked at him, and I said, 1%. And he goes, so if I make you 50-50, you're in? I said, I'll turn in my notice today. He looked across the table, stuck his hand out, and said, I'm in. We became partners that day, and that company became 150-store chain in the Southeast region, and it just really established me into the transaction. We actually sold that business in 1997. I was thinking I might have an early retirement in my late 40s. Pardon me. And so I bought a home and a golf course and played golf all the time and got bored about 4 months into it. About 8 months into it, I hated golf because I was playing it every day, and I started looking for something to do. Got my first exposure in the franchise world because I got involved in a tropical smoothie franchise with some buddies, and said, yeah, let's do it. I'm like, I got nothing to do, let's do it. I found myself at 49 out on a highway in a fruit costume with two of my children dressed as fruit, me dressed as fruit, and I'm handing out free smoothies and going, what am I doing? So, anyway, the smoothie business was fun, but it didn't float my boat. I tried a couple other businesses, and then I was talking to a friend of mine, and he had mentioned there was somebody out in Texas doing this, what we do now. It wasn't exact, but it was close. And that intrigued me because I could not go back into the traditional rent-to-own business because of the no-compete I'd signed with the company that bought it. And we went out and took a look at this thing, and then I came back and did a little research on the custom wheel business, and it looked like the demographics were exploding, and And so, you know, I just jumped in, came up with rent and roll, said, hey, we can do this, came back, started about a 6 or 9 months into it. So I was kind of well-known in the rent-to-own industry because I'd done a lot of public speaking in that genre. I was on the board of directors. A lot of people knew what I was doing. They wanted to know what I was doing, so they came to look. And a gentleman came and looked for a couple of days and said, hey, I want to do this. And I said, sure. I said, no worries. I'll help you. Don't worry about it. He said, no. I want to do a deal with you. And I said, Mike, don't worry about it. I'll give you everything we got and move. And he said, no. I don't want to do that. I want to call it this. So he sort of talked me into becoming a franchiser, and I didn't know it at the time. So that was, wow. It was almost like I was going to do it all for free. And he said, no, I won't let you do that. And I actually became a franchiser through that process. So, again, a lot has happened, a lot of changes, a lot of learning and things like that. But this past year, we actually have grown that into a business that did over $115 million last year. We're opening a store a month at minimum these days. We did 15 store openings last year. We got 31 on the board this year. Last year was the 17th largest tire dealer in the United States. And this year we should move to under 15. If you get in that top 10, boy, now you're talking lots of stores. So it's going to be a while before we get in the top 10, but we're going to move into the teams until we get there. So hopefully that's a short enough encapsulation of the last 30 years.
Yeah, that is, and I had the vision of you walking around in a fruit costume. That's one we haven't heard.
Hey,
we
haven't made a pretty mean banana,
really,
I
got to
tell you.
Yeah. So tell us, you know, as you looked at it and you talked about, you know, demographics exploding for this type of market, explain a little bit about the business model itself, what the consumer is looking at before we get into actually diving into the franchise model.
Well, originally the concept, that we were looking at was that, you know, custom wheels were getting very popular in the nation for a lot of people because it became more of something why they wanted to personalize their ride as opposed to, you know, I'm a big basketball star, I'm going to get custom wheels. You know, that drives that need and desire, but all of a sudden you're seeing moms bringing vans in for wheels and you're seeing things happening and saying, wow, that's just something else. But we found that there was a ton of people, and having come out of the rent-to-own industry, we're very familiar with a unbanked consumer that, you know, not a lot of people pay attention to or treat with a lot of respect. And these are folks that have just grown up in a different world. They didn't have a silver spoon in their mouth. They work hard for the money, but they don't have credit. No one ever taught them how to manage their credit. And it doesn't mean they don't deserve or want the same things that everybody else does, but they don't get financing and they need payments in order to get better quality things. And that's what kind of our industry is all about. It's to help people get the things they want and or need and give them an easy way to pay for it. And so that's basically the premise of the industry. And it just looked like to me that there was going to be a real opportunity on the wheel side. And there was. There's no question about it. We blew up. I mean, our first store just went crazy. Our second store went crazy. And you know, franchises coming on board were doing well. We just found that we were underserving the potential market because our focus was on the wheels. And that's when we really looked at the tire industry and said, wow, you know, if you look at the tire industry, $20 billion, you know, how many folks are out there and tire prices were going up tremendously. They were doubling. You know, there was a time when you could get a decent set of tires on your car for $200. All of a sudden, you know, after tariffs and all of these things happened in the rubber industry, tires started, you know, now $700 to $1,000. Well, we knew there was a ton of people out there that aren't walking around with $700 or $100 in their pocket to buy a new set of tires. And what we discovered is that most of them were buying used tires. They were going to these used tire places and paying $50-$60 for a tire, paying $20 to put it on, and 4 months later, doing it again. And 4 months later, doing it again. And never, ever having a quality set of tires on their car to protect their family and give them, you know, a safety. And so we looked at that as a real opportunity for us to get involved in that sector and solve that problem. And it really has just paid off dividends. When you find an unserved need and you're able to communicate that you have a solution to that problem, it really has just opened the doors for us. And through that, we have found, because we have several different opportunities of payment, we found everybody, our customer base has grown to the point that 60% of our business this past year was people that had never, ever been in a rent-to-own store in their life. They'd never used the rent-to-own transaction, the rental purchase transaction, what it's more formally referred to. And we have 120-day famous cash option. It's one of our most popular options. And what we have found is now we have just all walks of people. Anybody that needs tires or going by one of our stores and walking in. And because we put so much value in that transaction by the things we offer that normal tire dealers don't, we're finding just regular folks walking in and using that transaction every day. And that's really where the growth explosion is coming from.
And as the show title said, driving growth on the wheels of success, and use another a little segue into where the rubber meets the road, right?
There you go.
I know from having done some consulting with another individual that is looking at ventures with scrap tires. I was astonished to hear a figure that 300 million scrap tires are produced in the U.S. every year. So you've got what appears to be a wide-open, captivated market that continues year after year.
Oh, no question. If you look at the sheer growth of automobiles each year that come onto the market, you look at the replacement market in tires, it's one of the opportunity is limitless. I mean, we believe there's at least 1,500 to 3,000 stores available in the U.S., and we've just now reached 100. So, I mean, the opportunity is just absolutely amazing to how much opportunity there is out there.
Before we go to the break in about, 5 minutes or so, I'd like to just take a sidetrack again talking about you, the individual, because you've had a distinct honor of being on one of the national TV shows, and we've had numerous amount of guests on the show that have been on, Shark Tank, have been on CBS Undercover Boss, but nobody has been on the show from CNBC's Blue Collar Millionaire. Give us a quick overview of what that was like and how that came about.
It was a lot of fun. Actually, an acquaintance of mine, I guess, was watching the show. I'd never heard of the show, but a friend of mine was watching the show, and he had known me for a while and said, I think Larry Sutton would be really a good candidate for them. And he reached out to him and submitted my name and just gave him a little information. And I guess they were intrigued enough to call me and do a little phone interview. And we had our first interview, and I talked to him, and then I did some research, looked up the show, and I thought, well, that's kind of clever. I like it. So I'll stay on board here and see what happens. And so we had an initial call, and he said, okay, well, he says, this really went well. He said, what I'd like to do is send you a questionnaire. I'd like you to fill it out and send it back, and then I'd like to schedule another call with some producers. And so we did that. And from that call, they said, okay, now we want to do a Skype interview with you with all of our production staff on this date. And so we set that up. We did a Skype interview. About 30 days after that, I got a notification that I had been accepted as a candidate for the show, and they wanted to set a film date, and we did. And these guys show up in California. There's like 9 people and cameras everywhere, and those little robotic flying the drones, and they said, well, here's what we're going to do, and they kind of laid it all out and said, what we'd like is we'd like you to be who you are. If you can manage to do that, if you can pretend the cameras aren't here, just do what you do, and we want to get that. And then we're going to do a long interview, and then we want to have a deal at your house with your family, because that seems to be, you know, something that's very important to you, is your family, your grandkids, and your children. And so we did all of that filming over 2 days for a 15-minute show. And so the next thing they said, well, we'll probably air, you know, sometime in 6 months, and we'll let you know. And that's sort of how it all came about. It was almost an accident. I'll tell you a quick story. The night before we heard the show was going to air, I called one of my best friends and one of our largest franchisee and our development guy out west, and I said, David, I'm really nervous about this show. And he said, why? And I said, well, you got no editing. I mean, you know, they could make me look horrible. They could make our brand look bad. I mean, you know, this is out of our hands. And boom, boom, boom. And I mean, I'm just going on like a crying baby. And he said, Larry, just settle down. It's going to be fine. And it talked me off the cliff. And then I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to tell anybody this is on or whatever. So it came on, and they actually did a good job. They made our brand look good. They made me look good. I mean, it was and it went real well. My phone blew up with texts that night from people that knew me, and then people that didn't even know I was going to be on the show. I had texts going, I was just watching the show and I saw you, and our website blew up that night, almost to the point of shutting down. I mean, it was just such a I had no idea that show had that much exposure. We had 300 franchise leads come in 4 days or 5 days after that show. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
You're listening to Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto, talking with Larry Sutton, founder and CEO of R&R Tire Express and Custom Wheels, and CNBC TV star. Franchise Today brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, where they've been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years. The Franchise Foundry fosters healthy, sustainable growth for their clients, the kind of growth that comes from experience. Franchise Foundry provides both coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach. This delivers more effective solutions for both the franchisor's corporate team as well as for their franchisees. Franchise Foundry team is rich in practical, hands-on experience and expertise with general business management, operational and change management, digital marketing, and, of course, franchise recruitment and development. And the Franchise Foundry can also assist with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and providing the guidance needed to navigate them. Learn more about the Franchise Foundry and Paul Segretto, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. FRM empowers real-time business intelligence, communication, and collaboration between all members of the franchisor's team and prospective as well as existing franchisees. This enables you to simplify and seamlessly track, access, and manage all messages to and from prospective and existing franchisees, including text. Legal and compliance is simplified too, with FRM's document management, and even site visits can be digitally facilitated and scored with tools provided by FRM. Make today the day you give them a look, and assure that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including text, is permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. No long-term contracts, multiple upgrades each year at no additional cost, no excuses, just solutions, on the web at frmsolutions.com.
So let's talk a little bit about the franchise model, Larry. You gave us some indication on how you wound up in franchising. Tell us a bit about the day in the life of a franchisee in R&R Tire Express.
Well, you know, we have several different kinds of franchisees. We have some multi-unit developers who have, you know, big operations. Our largest one just opened his 20th store. And he has 5 stores under construction. I can tell you, in his case, he is a guy that just loves to to develop people, and that's his real thing. And he leaves his house every day, every wet week on Monday, and comes back on Friday or Saturday. He goes out and sees his stores, visits with his operators, and is constantly in new markets looking for new stores. So that's the days for him are just exciting, and meeting all of his new employees and things like that. Then you switch over to a guy that came into the franchise, and him and his dad were in the construction business, and for a whole lot of years had never been in automotive, but he was looking for an opportunity and happened to hear about us on a radio show. Went to his dad and said, "Hey, I want to look into this." They went on the website. They came to us, and he's actually about a 30-year-old, and they came in it together. They wanted to get in once they saw what we do and who we are about, and they opened their first store in Kansas City about a year and a half ago. They opened their second store about 6 months ago, and in his case, he's involved in the operation, so he's literally, you know, in the stores every day, working with his manager and with his people, and so his day is going to look completely different. He's an owner operator, and not really a franchise developer. Some of our guys started in that mode and became, you know, started opening more stores, and just their life changed as the more stores they had. But so you've got really. Depends on the franchisee, what their day might look like, and what they're involved in.
Why don't we talk a little bit about who it is that makes a perfect franchisee in this world? I know that, you know, I can't help but listen to your passion for the business and hear so many similarities to stories that I've heard from a good friend of both Paul's and mine, a guy named Greg Tanner, who spent a lot of years building out Aaron's, which is, I guess, a similar parallel to the rent-to-own business. And I know that a great many of those franchisees in that world weren't people who are selling tires or coming from the background of being in the rent-to-own business, but they were managing money. And I'm assuming that at different levels of ownership, you're looking for different things from your franchisees as well. So what are the different kinds of opportunities that are made available through your model, from single unit on up to what?
Well, again, we've got a commitment. We've got several large commitments for territory development with some big franchisees, and we have a lot of dad and fathers like that one I explained to you that are looking to, you know, they may be like six stores. You know, they start off with one, and when that's good, they go to two. And, you know, you mentioned Greg Tanner. Greg's actually a really good friend of mine, and he actually works with us as a franchise consultant, and he's been a plethora of information and guidance for us in the franchise world. Because, you know, again, when we got in the tire business, we couldn't spell tire, and when we got in the franchise business, we couldn't spell franchise. So,
I don't think Tanner can spell either of those even to this day.
Stan, I was just thinking, with Larry, you and I, and could you imagine Greg on the show? We don't have enough microphones.
We don't have enough time.
It would be Greg.
It would be Greg. It would be 2 hours. We'd have to be 2 hours and five
thing
mics.
For sure, if somebody came up with words of wisdom, it would make his book of Tannerisms coming from him. But
God, what a
really
great small
like
world.
We're about opportunity. So who would make a good franchise? Well, first of all, obviously you got to have the money. I mean, or the credit line to be able to get the money. I mean, it costs, you know, money to open a business. Might cost a little more when you open a business that actually buys products and gets its money back on time as opposed to up front. So, you know, our average investment in our FDD says it's between $500,000 and $700,000 to get a store up and running. And you know, the only difference in that is that if it's 700, it means you grew faster and you bought more product. The actual franchise. So you have to be financially qualified. One of the things we would never want to do is get in business with anyone that was so close to the financial bubble that it's possible they would run out of money before they hit the finish line, because that, you know, if they've invested their savings or their 401ks or whatever, we take that very seriously as a responsibility to make sure that they're financially, you know, well off enough to succeed. If it's one store they want to do, we're all about that, because one store could make a great business model for somebody that wanted to just have a business, a family business, maybe bring their kids in and that kind of thing. We've got a few like that, and they do really well, and they enjoy the business. There's others out there that want to grow. They've got a passion for growth. Most of the time, passion for growth is driven by you want to see other people succeed. And so, and that's basically, if you asked us what's the most fun in this business or any franchise business, it's to see people realize the dream they've always had of owning their own business, and then letting them take that where they want to be. So it's up to them how far they want to take it. If it's somebody that is not used to multi-unit development, we're pretty insistent that they prove out that they're in it and they know it and they're good at it. So we'd like to see them wait until they're successful, and then talk about additional stores after that. And then we have guys that come in and want to do, you know, a 20-store deal right out of the gate. You know, we want to do a development agreement, that kind of thing. So it's really all over the board. And there's so many opportunities across the United States that there's room for all of the above. If they've got a passion for helping people in our business, that pays big dividends, because we help a lot of people get the things they need and want. So if they've got that passion, or they've got an automotive passion, and just a passion for people, they'll succeed in this business. But those same kind of people will succeed in any business that they try, because, you know, it's not about, I just want to make more money. It's about, well, you know, what do you really want to do, and what would make you happy? And so we're pretty big on that from a culture standpoint. So we have a lot of different kind of people that have worked really well in the franchise.
Larry, tell us a little bit about, you know, the R&R locations. You know, what do they look like? Where is an ideal location in a particular market, all the way up to, you know, what the potential investment range is on your opportunity for a single unit we're talking about?
Generally speaking, the ideal location would probably be a little bit, look like some stores that people are familiar with, maybe a traditional tire store with a much bigger showroom. We'll generally have at least a 1,500 to 2,000 square foot showroom. We'll generally have 3 to 4 bays, although we have stores with one bay and we have stores with more bays. But if you were to visit our stores, the one thing that most people comment about is how nice they are and how clean they are and how well displayed they are. They're not used to seeing that style in this industry. Because we have a lot of nice wheels to show, and we've got, you know, all the tires. And so we do use a bigger showroom than traditional tire dealers, because we have a lot more to offer in terms of product offerings and a lot more styles, especially with the wheel business being a big factor in there as well. But the average square foot is the ideal square foot is probably around $5,000 or $6,000. I mean, excuse me, 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. And the smallest store we have in the country is probably 3,000 square feet. And the largest store we have in the country is probably 10,000 square feet. So, you know, it's all about what you find and what's available. Ideally, we'd probably want to be on a major road, which gets plenty of traffic. A lot of potential customer base within a 5-mile radius, because one of the things we found out is that, you know, 75% to 85% of your business will usually come within a 10-mile radius or a 30-minute drive of your operation. And so that being the case, you want to make sure there's plenty of population around that to support it. But you want a good traffic count. We do really well on roads with other tire dealers and fast food restaurants and things like that. One of the things we do with everybody is assist them in location searching. We'll actually go to the sites. We'll drive the towns. We'll have a lot of input on where we think the best location is and look at the possibilities, and then we'll do the demographics and help them select the best location in the towns that they're going to do. You get into towns of over 100,000 people, you probably might be looking at a couple of stores to serve that. Depends. Anywhere from, you know, over 100,000, you get to where maybe two stores might be required to really serve them. And in towns of less than that, usually one store will do it because you're less than 30 minutes drive time between there. So I hope that answers your question.
It does, and I'm going to throw another one that I'm really, really anxious to ask, because nothing about our podcast pleases me more than having people on who put their money where their mouth is. And in your case, as will be the case next week with Jimmy John, I've always marveled at Jimmy John's earnings claims and their financial performance representations. And if one goes to your website for franchise development, the very first thing that jumps off the page is some earnings information. So I know you've got a healthy item 19. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, when we first got into franchising, we had various people say, you know, you shouldn't do that, and you get blah, 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 blah. And, you know, as a businessman, I said to my people, I said, let me tell you something. If I was ever going to look at a business and you weren't going to tell me what the possibilities were of how much money they're going to bring in and how much they're going to make, you wouldn't get me past the door. So I was insistent that we absolutely participate in earnings claims, because that's the part of the story. You know, it's a major part of the story. You know, why would anybody want to get in business without knowing what the possibilities were? And so I was huge on that. And we have been very fortunate to have some great franchisees that have done such a good job at representing our brand that our earnings claims have just been going up every year. Our volume, store volumes have been going up every year, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20% on same store revenue growth, which is just amazing when you do it so many years in a row. And it's just been, you know, it's all about good people, people that buy into your dream, people that come in and believe in your culture. We think culture is just as important as anything else you're going to do, is the culture of your company, the beliefs that you have about your customers and your employees. And we're pretty insistent that, you know, franchise partners come in. It took me a while to learn the difference in selling a franchise and awarding a franchise. I really didn't understand that. And at first, we were selling franchises. And, you know, quite frankly, we sold some to some folks that probably shouldn't have been sold one. And therefore, they didn't do well. They didn't match. They didn't have the same values. They didn't have the same culture, and they weren't ready to follow a business model that had already been pre-done. And so we learned a lesson the hard way. We had some failures, and you know, I take that personally because it's people that have invested with me in an idea, and that was pretty hard on me. It almost drove me to get out of franchising, but instead I got with, you know, Tanner and people like Tanner and started learning more about, you know, how you do franchising. And now we award franchisees. When someone gets interested, you know, we get them to Discovery Day. Well, it's all about getting them in and us knowing them and them liking us and what we do. But it's every bit about as much as us liking them and knowing that they're going to give their passion to this business, and they're going to join our dream of becoming the best tire and wheel concept in America.
Well, talking about, you know, success in franchising, those of us in franchising and some out of franchising are aware of the Entrepreneur Franchise 500 list that comes out by our good friends at Entrepreneur Magazine every January.
Sure.
And I want to read just a couple of stats here. This year, R&R not only climbed up the ranks to number 126, the highest position in the company's history, but also brought home the title of number one in the miscellaneous auto products franchise category for the second year in a row. Give us a little bit of your perspective on such a ranking and what that means to you individually?
Well, I tell you, I wish I could take credit for it. I just can't. We have some of the most dedicated, passionate people that believe in our customers, they believe in our employees, and they believe in our concept. And when you get that, and then you have some motivation attached to that, and allow people some freedom to be creative, it never, ever ceases to amaze me what a group of people, motivated and purposeful group of people, can accomplish. So, again, I wish I could take credit for it, but it's all about the people that have bought into the dream and are paddling my boat. And so I'm just a very blessed man to have those kind of folks associated with our franchisees, our employees, our leaders. They're just all good quality folks that believe in the same thing I do and what we're trying to accomplish.
You definitely sound like a proud papa here.
No doubt about that.
So,
as
we said at the beginning of the show, Larry, you know, we're coming up in franchising in 2 weeks on the multi-unit franchising show in Las Vegas, Nevada. And of
I'll
course, these are always individual. You'll be there, okay? There was no doubt in my mind. So, with that in mind, I know recently you signed a 58-unit deal in the Southeast, and even by the virtue of multi-unit franchising, that is a gigantic deal. Tell us a little bit about that, to the extent that you can. What that's like? I mean, that's almost, even with all your success, that's almost game-changing, because it takes your brand even to another level, but of also with it, you know, brings a little bit of complexity. I mean, you're bringing in a multi-unit franchisee, you know, long-term will be 58 units. I mean, that's a pretty powerful franchisee.
Absolutely. Again, you know, that was come from internal, because that particular group that signed that deal are already owning and operating 12 stores in the territory. And
wow.
So they had they realized that we were becoming a kind of a well-known group out there. We were getting a lot more activity, and it looked like the growth was just going to just blow up. And he called me one day and said, you know, I'd like you to come to Gulfport and meet with me. We have a plan that we want to present to you and see if we can secure some territory for the next 10 years' growth. And I said, would love to. And I took myself and my good friend David Harrison, who's our area developer in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and also our largest franchisee. And we went out and met, and he presented his plan. And, you know, we all looked at it. It looked very realistic on store count. His motivation for it, his financing was in place, and he wanted to just commit all of his resources to growing his R&R business. And so we worked it all out, and that night went to what I thought was going to be a private dinner with him and his wife and a couple of his folks. And I walked into a surprise birthday party when people flew off from all over the country, and I'm out of town. You never expect that. So that day we signed the 58-store agreement, and that night I walked into a surprise birthday party with about 100 or so people that had flown into this town I was in to celebrate my birthday. So you'd call that a great day.
Yeah, I would say so. Wow.
So, Larry, you're going to be at the multi-unit conference, which is probably going to be the first time that the multi-unit conference has had not one but two CNBC stars in the house at the same time, with Marcus Leonis there next week. Where else in the coming weeks can prospective franchisees find you? Are you going to be participating in any other industry, be that automotive or franchise expo shows or fairs, where people can find you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I've got some traveling coming up. I'm going to the franchise show the following. I get home that Friday, and that following Tuesday morning, I fly into Oklahoma City I have an aunt that was my my closest sibling to my mother, and she's turning 83. So my sister and I are flying from Tampa to surprise her for her birthday, and
nice.
I'm coming back after a couple of days. I'll visit my franchisee in Oklahoma City while I'm there, and then I'll come back. And the following week, I go to APRO in Galveston, Texas, which is the Association of Professional Rent-to-Own Organizations, who I'm a former board member of and a participant in their program. They're basically the national association for all the rent-to-own and rental purchase dealers in the country. And shortly after that, I'm going to have a little store visit trip planned and go out and see some new stores that have opened that I couldn't get to the grand opening, but we had people there. But I want to go. I always like to go see the new stores and meet the people. That's just I would rather do that than anything else. And so I've got quite a bit of traveling coming up here in the near future. Always love the IFA because I walk away learning. You know, you learn when you go out there. You learn things that are amazing that you didn't know, and it's a great experience to go out there and meet people and learn from them.
Well, and for the benefit of those in the audience that may not be attending any of these upcoming expos, we don't want to let you get away today without telling the audience how they can get in touch with you and how they can learn more about your tremendous opportunities.
Well, I appreciate that. Our franchise website is rnrfranchise.com. They can go on there to find all about franchising. If they want to know about our company in general and see our corporate website, our company website, just go to rnrtires.com you'll see pictures of stores. You'll see a lot about our company and what we do for the public. And if you're interested in franchising, go to rnrfranchise.com, and that starts the process. It gives you the financial disclosures and tells you about who we are and gives you some basics of our business. And from there, you can call me. I was on the phone for a couple hours yesterday with somebody that just found my number and called me. I've had a lot of that since the show. As you can tell, I'm not shy about talking. I'll get on the phone and as my guys say, I'll talk more than I should, but that's okay, I guess. It's worked out so far.
Well, we want to thank you for being our guest today, Larry. You know, it's no surprise to me that the show title of the Blue Collar Millionaires episode that you're on was I'll Never Tire of It, because not only does it make the nice reference to tires, but I don't think you'll ever tire of something that you're so passionate about, and I certainly commend you for that. It shines through. Thank you again for being our guest.
Thank you so much. I'm honored, and you guys have got a great reputation, and I'm very honored to be your guest. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Hopefully I can meet you at IFA.
I'll be looking for you out in Vegas at the multi-unit. I'll be there with you.
Fantastic.
That sounds good. I don't know if I'll be there yet. My plans are up in the air, but certainly we will run into each other at some point. Again, I really appreciate you being with us today.
And you see, Tanner, hit him once for me. You guys have a great day. Thank you so much.
You do the same.
You too, Larry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Stan, wow, that was great. It was great getting Greg's name on the show. You know, we need to reach out to Greg and get him on the show. We just might have to do a two-hour segment at that point.
We need the first hour.
Part A
just for
part B.
Yeah, the first hour would be Greg talking about himself, and the second hour would be us talking about Greg, right? That's kind of how that would work.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. You know,
Greg
Tanner's got
a wealth of wisdom.
Yeah. He's got so much to give that the one thing that doesn't surprise me, I mean, literally that they're both in the rent-to-own business for so many years, it makes sense that Greg Tanner would be consulting for Larry. But you know what? There's a lot more going on that they have in common that I've taken out of this podcast, Paul. When you listen to the passion that Larry exudes and the happiness, I mean, you can hear that man smiling all the time Well, there's a common denominator between he and Greg Tanner, don't you think?
Well, that's what I was going to say. The only downside to having Greg on a podcast or a radio show is you can't see his smile, because that smile is there all the time. But you certainly can hear it. I mean,
yep.
and Larry today, I mean, that was just, you know, tremendous. I don't think I've heard in 8 years now, this is our eighth year on the air, I don't think I've ever heard somebody with not only the same passion, but the joy in his voice, the excitement, yep. the enthusiasm in his voice. And you could just tell this man is full of passion. And I'm kind of jealous if I'm not at multi-unit and you get to meet him first.
Well, I can't help that for you, Paul, but I can help the audience get a look at what we are hearing in Larry's smile. You can find the episode of CNBC.com, Blue Collar Millionaires. Larry's featured there, so you can find it on demand. And talking about passion, Paul, the epitome of passion next week in Jimmy John, because you're going to hear the same thing. There's a common denominator between successful entrepreneurs that can share the vision, share their values, and share their dreams with those who hitch their wagons to those happy engines. And I mean attitude, belief, commitment. It's as much as, and I think I heard Larry say it today, it's as much as that brings the culture of your brand to life as it is the product or the service that you're providing. And I think that's a common thread that we find in all of our successful C-level executives in the world of franchising. They all have that break through the noise, break through the clutter, never quit. Just like a high-performing professional athlete, they only know one speed, and it's go, and they only know one way to play the game, and that's to win.
Yep, absolutely. Well, another good show next week. A lot of hype leading up to Jimmy John himself. And again, you'll be with him live, sitting across the table, chomping on some Jimmy John. I will be on the air as well. But, of course, another level of jealousy, as you'll be there, and I will be calling in remote.
Well, and make sure you call your Jimmy John's and get a sandwich delivered, and we'll all be chowing down together.
I'm going to have to do that. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, on this great, great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.
Franchise Pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising Today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise Today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise Today. Franchise today. Franchise today. Yeah.